Good morning. Welcome to the Monadnock Summer Lyceum. My name is Gordon Peary. I'm president of the Peterborough Historical Society. I'm a contradance piano player and the narrator for this morning's program, a celebration of New England contradance music honoring Bob McQuillan and featuring Bob's band, Old New England. Since 1828, the Monadnock Summer Lyceum has been bringing outstanding world-class speakers to the Monadnock region to serve as a catalyst to inform, engage, and inspire an active citizenry on local, national, and global issues. The Monadnock Summer Lyceum is held at the historic Unitarian Universalist Church in downtown Peterborough, New Hampshire, at 11 o'clock on summer Sunday mornings. We invite our New Hampshire Public Radio audience to attend future programs and to meet our speakers at the receptions following. And now for this morning's program. It began centuries ago, played on some fiddle-like instrument, a simple melody of symmetric form, and the inspiration to repeat it. Over and over, it becomes a meditation, capturing and conveying something about its native land, the trees, a river, a hillside, a valley, the sky above, the earth below. Feet lifted in joy, a stomp of celebration, a joining of hands, a circle round. Repeated like the sunrise, like the moon, like the seasons, the comfort of familiarity, though each time a little different. In 1651, John Playford, a London bookseller and a musician, published The English Dancing Master, a collection of English country dances and tunes. It was extremely popular and quickly spread to France, where the dance form, done in lines of couples facing opposite each other, came to be known as contredanse. The tunes came here with the fiddles that traveled with their people to this new land. Like the people who sought new life, adventure, and freedom, the tunes were ready to lend their folk roots to be the foundation of something new. New communities, eager for diversion and cohesion, found both with the music and dance. French dancing masters roamed the colonial countryside, teaching the contredanse, which became contradance. These dances were appealing to the nascent democracy. The dancers were equal, with everyone in the set engaged with everyone else, the farmer, the banker, the blacksmith, the teacher. Some resistance. In 1669, the legislature of the Massachusetts Bay Colony included fiddlers, along with common pipers, jugglers, psalmists, and several other lewd, idle, and disorderly persons, in a law detailing the type of miscreants who should be placed in county houses of correction. And the dance, preaching in the 1750s, the minister Increase Mather said, "The miserable dancer knoweth not that as many steps as he makes in dancing, so many steps he makes to hell. It cannot be tolerated in New England." But it was not just tolerated, it took root and thrived. In a farmhouse, the fiddler might be put in the sink out of the way, with tables and chairs moved aside to accommodate the dancers for a kitchen junket. More prosperous homes might have a ballroom, and in time, town halls became the place for dancing. Other instruments eventually joined in. Depictions of dances show the full range of strings, violin, viola, cello, bass, as well as brass and woodwinds. New tunes were written. Contradancing was the default entertainment and served the additional function of teaching social graces and nurturing community. And of course, there was the potential for flirtation and courtship, thus ensuring the continuity of community. New tunes were written to celebrate people, places, and events. Hull's Victory, a dance and tune written to commemorate the defeat of the HMS Guerriere by the USS Constitution under the command of Isaac Hull on August 19, 1812. Actives, give right to your partner and left below, balance four in line. Turn your neighbor by the left hand twice round. Actives, allemande, right your partner all the way around. Balance, four in line. Actives, swing in the center. Actives, down the center, turn as a couple. Come back and cast off, right and left across, right and left back. And the dance starts again. The active couples work their way down the line, and inactives work their way up, each time through, dancing with a different couple. This is the pattern for most contradances. The disruption of the Civil War and the introduction of new kinds of music and dance and other social diversions brought a decline in contradancing, but it remained a part of cultural life, particularly in the small rural towns of New England. In the mid to late 1800s, new modes of transportation and increased prosperity made it easier to acquire pianos, and they became common in households and dance halls. Now, there's no shortage of written music for fiddle tunes, though many fiddlers prefer to play by ear, but the written music is most always just the melody. There are few guidelines for the piano accompaniment. So it's up to the piano player to learn from elders and then develop their own style of playing. There are traditions of piano playing in backing up fiddle tunes from other cultures, but the New England piano style is unique and is really the defining characteristic of our music. People danced wherever they could, but our town halls here in New England were often the venue of choice. These halls are simple buildings, but they were designed with a sense of form and balance, like the music and dance that filled them. The New England town hall is the home to democracy at the most basic level. Think of town meetings, public hearings, events where people gather to discuss, to debate, arguing, sometimes almost to the point of physical confrontation, all to build and sustain their community. And this is how the dance works. You engage with others, sometimes coming together, sometimes moving apart. One of the most satisfying moves in contra dancing is the balance, where you grab the hand of someone and pull back, holding your own against the pull of your partner. And like democracy, if you don't stand firmly by your convictions, the dance doesn't work as well. Our town halls have absorbed decades of the dance, the music, and civic engagement, and you can feel it in the walls. Musicians from all over the world have come to our town halls to perform and often remark on this special feeling. They can tell that this is where the music and dance and civic life are intertwined. A celebration of New England contra dance music is a celebration of our land, our rivers, our trees, our people, our way of life, our unique juxtaposed characteristics of frugality and generosity, of keeping unto ourselves, but being our brother's keepers. Contra dance music is as solid as the granite beneath us, yet flowing as our rivers. It is the music that embodies the spirit of New England. The dance. People gather in anticipation. The musicians are on stage, tuning up, telling jokes. The caller assembles the dancers into a contra line and runs through the figures. A do-si-do, a hey for four, a swing of your partner, a right-hand star, really just a few figures, most of them well known to the dancers, but combine in each dance in such a way that makes it unique. Then the caller turns to the musicians and, looking at the piano player, says, four potatoes. Four potatoes, a New England way of describing those four boom chick beats. It sure is. A New England way of describing those four boom chick beats from the piano that sets the tempo and allows the musicians and dancers to all start together. The dance begins and people meet each other up and down the hall. Suddenly, you've got your arm around someone turns out to be the guy you practically brawled with at town meeting. Or perhaps it's your ex-girlfriend, or your ex-girlfriend's new boyfriend. But the music and dance is happening, and everything is good. In the mid-1940s, young Bob McQuillan starts going to contra dances. He likes the dance, but he loves the music, and eventually he brings his accordion and asks if he can sit in with Ralph Page's band. Soon he's invited to join the band, no wonder with the joyful resonance he's providing, and he plays his first official dance in the Peterborough townhouse in 1947. He learns from Johnny Trumbly, the piano player, how you play that instrument for a dance. Eventually Bob's at the piano, playing for years with Ralph Page and many other happy configurations and putting his unique stamp on the music. Then in the early 1970s, a charismatic young dance caller named Dudley Laufman ignited a passion for dancing among the young hippie population. Suddenly, the halls were filled with barefoot, ragged, unkempt, and extremely happy young people traveling all over New England from one dance to another. McQuillan, or Mr. Mack as he is called at Conval High School where he teaches, owns a giant dark green Chevy Suburban called the Hog. And on Friday and Saturday nights, he drives all around the Monadnock region and picks up kids and brings them to the dances. Dudley assembles the Canterbury Country Dance Orchestra, breaking new musical ground with Bob at the piano. The sound is joyful and captures the carefree spirit of the time. Then Bob forms his own band, New England Tradition, with April Limber and Pete Colby. April and Pete left the world tragically in 1988, but how we remember Pete's sprightly banjo and April's rich and authoritative fiddling. As we honor Bob McQuillan, so we honor the memory of Pete and April. Last month, Bob celebrated his birthday and now has more years than a piano has keys. Shortly after that, he flew out to Port Townsend, Washington, to be on the staff of the week-long Festival of American Fiddle Tunes. When he's not off on such escapades, he can usually be found in Nelson every Monday night and frequently at the first Saturday dance in the Peterborough Townhouse, where he has now been playing for close to 65 years. As you can imagine, at this point, Bob can play with anyone he wants, and he does, in fact, play with a lot of different musicians. But when it was time for him to form a new band, there were two amazing women who he chose to be his musical companions. Jane and Deanna have both been longtime friends of Bob's, but they came together as a trio in 1992 in a magical combination that is uniquely gifted in capturing the sound of old New England, the spirit of the town halls, the power of the dance, the pleasures of our New England landscape, the joy of our community. So let's celebrate New England contra dance music. Please welcome Jane Orzechowski, Deanna Stiles, and Bob McQuillan, Old New England.
Can you hear me? I'm the old part of that, and that part is spelled P-H-A-R-T-T-T-T.
Thank you. That's a wonderful polka we learned from Don Braley, who was an amazing fiddler from East Concord, New Hampshire. And his parents played for dances and grandparents. And his father would play that particular tune to start every dance. And we didn't have a name for it, so we just called it his dad's polka. And we really love it. And thank you to Don Braley.
And now we'll play a set of reels. The first two are traditional. Peace River Breakdown. Did we learn that from Don Braley? And going into Sailor Set on Shore. And then we'll play one that Bob McQuillan wrote and named after some of his favorite people, like a lot of his tunes are. And this one's called The Brennan Brothers, and they're from Philadelphia. Thank you.
Thank you.
awake? Can you hear? Can you hear? Oh, do it this way. Do it this way. Whoopee! Woo woo! The way that tune ended, it didn't end on a solid note, did it, so to speak? We call that, or it is called, we didn't name it, but somebody else called it, hang it. And that means let it hang. So that's what it was called. So you heard a tune, and it's twice that this morning we've hung two tunes. And that was one, and the one back a ways was another one. Thank you. I wanted also to say thank you to Jane and Deanna, without whom I would be, what?
Playing by yourself here.
Gone. Gone but not forgotten. Maybe gone and forgotten. But for all these years, since 1992, Deanna and I have been playing music together, and it's been one of the joyful things in my life. So I have much love and many thanks for those two wonderful women. Great musicians, great. Thank you both.
We're going to play a waltz for you, and this has to do with Bob McQuillan because it's one of his friends that wrote this waltz. In fact, it's one of the Brennan brothers named John Brennan, and he wrote this waltz for me, so it's called Janie's Waltz, the dog.
In 1973, Bob wrote his first contra dance tune. He called the tune Scotty O'Neill, named after a young friend who had died tragically in a motorcycle accident at the age of 17. Then more tunes flowed out, mostly named after people, reflecting his warm and wide circle of friends. Sarah's Whistle, Paul's Jig, Aaron's Air, Dancing with Duke. When he had composed 100 tunes, he had them published as Bob's Notebook of Jigs, Reels, and Other Tunes. He kept writing, and after a while, Notebook Number 2, containing another 100 tunes, was published. And so it has continued. Here in my hands, hot off the press, is Notebook Number 15. This and other recent volumes are published by Bowen Publishing, owned by Sarah Bowen, who has been playing music with Bob since the early 1970s when she was 12 years old, and when she was one of those kids Bob would pick up in the hog and bring to dances. Jay and Molly's Waltz, Ethan's Reel, Mary Shonk's, Our Governor's Waltz for Gene Shaheen, and whimsically, Santa's Jig, possibly the only contra dance tune ever written for Santa Claus. This is Bob's world, thousands of people from all over, including the North Pole, whose lives have intertwined with his. We'll hear a few of Bob's tunes now, starting with Scotty O'Neill.
I'm going to do Scotty O'Neill into a jig called Mary Elders, into a reel called Dancing Bear, which probably many of you know.
You got to put on a sweater if you do the Dancing Bear. Hang on, I gotta rock this. You know what a magic slate is?
D.
Well,
D dog.
Yeah, D-Dog, the first tune, D-Dog, D.
G-Wiz.
G-Wiz, the second tune, G-Wiz.
E minor.
And the last one is E minor. And what I do is I've written that those three keys on this little magic slate business, and then I set that down where I can see it. And that tells me that we're, and I know we're going to do these twice each, and then we go on D twice, and then G twice, and then E minor twice, and then we can quit. That's how the magic slate works. Yep.
Thank you.
if I mentioned those were all by Bob McQuillan, written, made by Bob McQuillan.
I don't know what she just said because I can't quite hear her, but whatever she said, that was very nice. But because we're in Peterborough, Scotty O'Neill was from Peterborough. He lived up on High Street. Time out. I'm trying to find out what key that whistle's in, but I can't do it. So anyway, Scotty O'Neill was what you heard her say. He crashed in a motorcycle. He was one of my beloved schoolboys. He was a nifty kid. He lived up on High Street, and he's buried up in your wonderful cemetery up on the main cemetery up back of the town. And so I just thought I'd tell you that, because he was a sweet kid. He needed a tune, and I wrote it. Thank you.
Yep. Gonna do marches.
First one is marches. Comer's. I believe Bob's middle name is Comer.
Can't hear a word.
Comer's March.
Oh, Comer, doing that now? Oh, boy.
And followed by
Myron's
March.
Oh, my God. How does that go? Let's see. I got the thing written out here in my own way. Let's see if it'll work. Comer starting.
All the tunes in the set were written by Bob McQuillan, just so you know, in case we forget to say so.
My middle name is Comer, by the way. And it's all Sarah Bowen's fault, this Comer's March business, so...
Thank you.
you. Now, the next one is a waltz that has to do with the Peterborough Townhouse that Gordon was talking about earlier. Steve Zakon Anderson has been calling for First Saturday dances for quite a long, long, long time. And when he got married to Betty Anderson, Quack wrote a tune for them, and Betty Anderson married Steve Zakon, so he called it A to Z Waltz. In Gee Whiz.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Now what are we doing?
We're going to do reels.
Reels?
Reels.
Oh, my.
Good. Rear End Reel.
Rear End. Oh, yeah.
Which he wrote when he was out on the West Coast, and Laurie Andrus was driving, and somebody rear-ended Laurie. So that's the name, the title. You might think it's something else, but okay. Then Lou J. LaForte, which Bob wrote for somebody. I don't know who. You'll have to look it up in one of his bookies. And third, Madame Jobin.
Yeah, cool. Not the rear end reel. That isn't. Excuse me. I can't help it. That has nothing to do with New England, but it had a lot to do with the West Coast at the time. But what has to do with New England is that this Louis de Laforte, he's a nifty guy, French fella, French American, French Canadian, lives down in, oh God, where does he live? Brookline or something, I forget where he lives, down south of us here. Go to his house, great fiddler. Had nice dinner at his house. And then the last one on this list is this Madame Jobin. Now, Madame Jobin is a nifty lady, and she played piano with a Nate guy up in Concord. All these are people that I have known. These go back 40 years or something like that, these two. And they were so fun at the time, and the people were delightful, and that's how come they're here. So I don't know why I should talk, but I just wanted to mention what I just did. So now I'll shut up and we'll play.
It's amazing the logistics have gone as well as they have. So, in the beginning of the program, I requested that people not keep time to the music, but I was unaware that you all have these devices for keeping time to the music and cooling yourselves at the same time. It works out very well. So, it's significant that Bob lives on Granite Street here in Peterborough. Both his piano playing and his character are granite solid. But he also lives about as close as you can get to the Kentuckook River, equally significant because both his playing and his person are fluid and flowing like the river. The river is guided by its banks and so adheres to tradition, but the river also determines the banks and over time determines tradition. Someone once told me it was as if decades ago a great hand came down and plucked Bob McQuillan like a string, and he's never stopped resonating. His influence has been huge. Just ask any student who was at Conval during his long time teaching there. Stories abound about how he could, with unchallenged authority, bring order to an unruly classroom. Or acquiescing to his mischievous side would demonstrate that if you threw a lit cigarette into a container of gasoline, it would not cause an explosion. Just ask dancers and contra dance musicians from all over the country, the namesakes of his tunes, the recipients of his generosity in so many ways. Bob is a teacher, but he doesn't present you with facts and figures to learn. He just is who he is, and when you're around him, you become more who you are. Who is Bob McQuillan? In a 1976 documentary, Country Corners, by Dick Neville and Bob Fiore, at the end of the film, there's Bob playing music, and in a voiceover, he says, "I am part of the music now, and the music is a part of me now. I have played the music for so many years that the music and I are one now. The total immersement, McQuillan in the music, and that's how it is now." That was over 35 years ago, and now there are generations of contra dance musicians, and we are part of McQuillan now, and McQuillan is a part of us now, and we are all together part of the music, and that's how it is now. Four potatoes. Thank you.
I'm supposed to talk now. I don't know if I got any speech left in me after what I just saw. That's the most delicious, the loveliest, nicest, sweetest thing I ever saw that ever happened to me. All the wonderful musicians, which I don't know how far back I go with that crew, probably Dudley, unless there's somebody that's older than him involved. Well, you know, I think he's the oldest one in that crew, and then everybody else, with whom I have played music at one time or another over so many years. And it's marvelous to be here today, and for what I just saw, that's really bugging me. Made me cry. Thanks ever so much for what you've done. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Anyway, I played with Deanna for years. And Deanna, she wound up on the shores of the Blackwater River. And she stayed there in a little cabin, which I won't tell you where that came from, except that it came from... No, I won't. And while she was there, she managed to produce a cute little thing about that long, sweet, cute, oh my God, adorable. And she named it Amelia. Well, Amelia got longer and longer and longer and longer, and then pretty soon it was up about that high, and now it's up about this high, and 34, something like that, years old, whatever she had, two kids. Sweet woman, lovely kids. Anyhow, Amelia.
You've been listening to the Monadnock Summer Lyceum on New Hampshire Public Radio. The Monadnock Summer Lyceum presents a weekly series of lectures held at the Unitarian Universalist Church in Peterborough, New Hampshire. For more information about the Lyceum, you can visit our website at www.monadnocklyceum.org or by writing the Monadnock Lyceum Committee, 25 Main Street, Peterborough, New Hampshire, 03458. The program next Sunday will feature Tracy McMillan, who will be speaking about rethinking food politics in America, from farmers markets to Walmart.